Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. This is the Rivalry Week Recap Edition. We would have a more clever name, but we do not need one, because this year's Rivalry Week lived up to its billing as the settling of accounts in an unfair, unjust, and entirely entertaining way. Yes, a parade of petty, a cavalcade of spite. That's what this Rivalry Week Edition for 2016 was. I am Spencer Hall. SB Nation person. Change my title weekly. Ryan Nanny joining us from Brooklyn, New York. Say hi.
Hi. How's it going?
Pretty well. Hey, where did Nick Fitzgerald go to school, Ryan?
UT Chattanooga. Wait, no. That's where he might have gone had he not been plucked away from the Mocs to play for Mississippi State.
That's true. And what'd they do this weekend?
Just to give you
an idea of the kind of spite we're going to be describing, praising, and reviewing for you.
Ole Miss, they put it on you. They put it on you bad. 55-20? I mean... and said Nick Fitzgerald ran for 258 yards on the ground. Landshark seems an appropriate term for this Ole Miss defense because they flop on the ground and die.
UT Chattanooga!
My God. It's just, y'all got your asses just absolutely whooped. Two players for Mississippi State ran for 190 yards. That's insane. Ole Miss as a team barely got to 200. So, you know what? Like, Ole Miss is in the curious position of, yes, Hugh Freeze has taken the program to heights that previous coaches would have loved to reach. But this season, their best win is arguably the one-point win against Texas A&M. After that, it's Georgia. And after that, yeah.
Hugh Freeze tweeted it last night. Hugh Freeze looked like he spent the night in a bad place. He looked at half. At the halftime, it looked like he'd gone through chemo. He looked bad. He looked shaken to his core. He looked like he no longer believed in the love he so enjoys talking about on a regular basis. That's how bad this loss was. Jason Kirk from beautiful Kennesaw, Georgia. Hey, are you indoors?
Yeah, at the moment. It's below 50 degrees outside, so I'm incapable of going outside. So y'all get blessed with adequate audio quality today.
Hey, man, stay safe out there. In those temperatures, whew.
Yeah, I know, right?
Just
50s. Whew.
Actually, it has peaked over 50, but can't risk it.
I mean, you really, Jason's not going outside unless the temperature's in, like, Syracuse pit territory, I assume.
Yeah, we're going to need numbers that make you say, basketball season already?
Yeah,
because let's put it this way. Pittsburgh, who I deem this year's most important team not involved in the playoff, because they will probably have two wins over playoff teams, they ended up beating Syracuse. An everyday occurrence, one would assume. It's like a 3-8, right? Syracuse team, or a 3-7 Syracuse team coming, or whatever they were, 4-7 coming into this game. Everyone should beat Syracuse. And it's true, Pitt did beat them. They beat them by a score of 76-61. And because we like to tackle the big things here on the podcast first, we'll just go over a few of these numbers for you. Because we like math. In the fourth quarter, if you like a flurry, if you like a sprint to the finish, Pitt-Syracuse was your game because they scored 47 points in the fourth quarter. 47 points! And in the relatively docile second quarter, they only scored 28 points between the two teams. Syracuse had 38 first downs. Pitt almost had as many yards, 644 to 668, but only had 20 first downs, meaning they were just biting off whole hunks.
Pitt only ran 59 plays.
59. So they bought the jumbo plays.
And that includes some kneel downs at the end. So, like, my God.
Yeah, you would assume this was my other favorite stat of the week, by the way. In a rivalry game, humiliation at the hands of Clemson. Okay? I mentioned this in the top, whatever. 56-7. That's what Clemson did. South Carolina Clemson had 41 first downs. Now, normally you see this kind of thing in a game like Oklahoma-Texas Tech, where one team is putting up massive points, the other one is responding, and you get this shootout. Nope. What this means is classic Will Muschamp football. It means that they were making tackles all the way to the end and extending the pain and the bleeding as far as they could possibly go in a futile effort.
Yeah. South Carolina showed up to a mini gun fight with a slap bracelet. It did not go great.
But they didn't give up.
They kept slapping, though, didn't they?
They just
God damned if they ever stop slapping.
These aren't allowed in schools because they're dangerous. Go Cox!
Just, I mean, the effort it takes to give someone 41 first downs and keep them in the game like that, despite already being up, to not let them go the other 30 yards to the end zone and just give up an arm tackle. Man, that's some noble defeat there.
That was, I mean, in true Dabo fashion, this is a baptism. And you survived South Carolina, so technically it's a successful one.
I think South Carolina, I don't think they got the point of the baptism. It was like, they thought it was like an endurance thing, like, see how long you can stay under.
Okay, we're at 3 minutes.
He's getting so close to Jesus.
Starting to worry.
Yeah.
Other great moments of spite. I would like to highlight a few before we get to the larger issues, i.e., your Michigan Ohio State, which frankly is as spiteful and storied as a rivalry can possibly be, certainly fits in this category. But a few moments of highlights for those who might have fallen under the radar. First of all, it would be cool. North Carolina, with a couple of other dominoes, could have made the ACC championship game. But nope! NC State! They really wanted that Continental Tire Bowl or wherever the hell they're going to play in Charlotte. Yep, they beat them 28-21
now,
to finish 6-6 and knock North Carolina out of ACC championship consideration.
Now, I assume one of the other dominoes that you're referring to would have been Virginia winning?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, cool.
That's
so,
a big domino. That's a pretty big domino. That's a whole damn wall.
That's a building. That's a building that needed to fall. I do like to make it more spiteful by pointing that out. Also, that NC State just got up 21-0 and kind of sat on North Carolina. Love it when that happens. Additional rivalry spite. Arkansas really wanted to finish strong.
No, man.
Really wanted to, you know, hit the tape. Sprinting, right? Yeah. They lost to Missouri.
They did.
A 4-8 Missouri team.
So November is dead. November
2-2. No, they were 2-2.
Well, they were better in the other months. November lasted 3 years. We'll even give them credit for the first year when they were a better bad team, but it was a 3-year run.
Yeah, it was a good one too. But it really admiring the spite and backbone shown by Missouri.
We called it since they started conference play. They have not won games back to back. So we already called this loss. God, we're brilliant.
We are. And you know that counts for
spotting the trends.
that counts for nothing, aka zero, which is what Arkansas scored in the second half.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Rolling on, I only got one more. Okay, maybe two more. That I really want to mention in terms of rivalry week's bite. Arizona State, Arizona was the late game on Friday. And this looked pretty dismal going in. Arizona, 2-9. They were 0-7 in the Pac-12 going in. And not a good 0-7 either. Nope. Getting lapped. Not staying on the track. Not competitive. Hey, Jason. What happened?
To Arizona State? Is that what we're...
Yeah. Well, yeah, come on. That's the conversation we're having right now.
Okay. Well, they don't have. I think they only played with 9 defenders. It was very sad. Some guys got lost on the way to the stadium. The stadium's not very far away. Those two campuses are pretty close, but they only had 9 defenders, and they were all back covering the pass, which turned out to be the wrong idea because Arizona put up 511 rushing yards? Is that right? That's a number in my head. That can't be right.
God,
512.
I was selling them short.
Jesus. Give them 3 feet.
You remember when Arizona State was 5-0
and not a single person bought it. Like, I think we on here just kind of, huh? I think that was our reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, turned out that was, turned out we were all right about Arizona State.
That was
yeah, that's it. Brandon Dawkins attempted how many passes? How many?
How many?
Hey, I don't know.
Eight.
Who?
They beat Arizona State 56-35 and denied them a bowl eligible record by throwing the ball 8 times and only That's completing good. 3 passes. Arizona, you are the best team in the world this week.
can we also give a little shout out to Iowa though, because my God.
Absolutely.
Iowa put up 40 points on Nebraska and they did it without any field goals.
Not
like,
one.
Like, this was just a bloodletting. And it's not as if Nebraska didn't have anything to play for. They still needed help to get to the Big Ten championship game. But, you know, part of it was helping themselves first. And, hey, look at that. It's a 9-win Nebraska team.
I'll be damned. When have we seen those before?
If they lose their bowl game, what would they be? They'd be 9-4.
9-4. That's weird.
Interesting.
Hmm.
They've really got this program turned around.
But they're a much politer 9-4 now. So
they really are. They'll just let you have 40 points.
And
September 4th. It's more than Bo Pelini Day now.
anything else that we missed of particular hate that you don't think we're gonna get to later? I mean, Texas. Oh,
yes, yeah, just that. That just feels sad. Oh, you know what? We might want to mention one.
Yeah.
The ACC went 3-1 against the SEC.
What was the one?
If you had to pick that one in a million tries, you'd probably get it in a million tries. But it wouldn't be soon. Wouldn't be early in the series. No, man. Kentucky. That would be Kentucky, the worst football team on the planet.
Pride of the SEC East. Now, if you had... if you had the whole SEC East play a round robin starting right now, you'd probably pick Kentucky, wouldn't you?
I don't know. I'd throw Vandy in the mix, buddy.
Yeah, no, I don't want to snub or spite Vandy.
I don't want any part of your standard SEC power rankings reversed in exactly that order. I don't want any part of Vandy right now because Kyle Shermer learned how to pass over the last 3 weeks.
Well, hold on. He got a little help. Tennessee. Okay, I hear what you're saying, but Tennessee is all about like, here, let me just, you can't reach the top shelf? Here, why don't we just give you a little boost? There you go, 400 yards. It's right up there. Just grab it. Go get it. You did it. I'm so proud of you.
Stepladder defense.
the bumpers on the side of the lane and bowling. That's what Tennessee is giving you defensively. But
shit,
yeah,
it's more than that. Tennessee's going down and kicking 3 pins over for you. Hey, you're already... Look at that. You just need 7 now.
They just have Derek Barnett to make them feel good about themselves. Like, we got a defender. One.
God.
Yeah, they're injured. But still, Kyle Shermer was throwing ropes against the Tennessee defense. But still.
But
I'm gonna give him credit. This narrative should not be undimmed. Or should not be dimmed by your pessimism or realism.
I really appreciate that the sort of name brand teams of the SEC East all had the decency to look like total shit at the same time so that none of us can laugh at each other. It's the most Three Stooges way to end the regular season because we all have pie on our face and have slipped and broken our tailbones.
Before we discuss exactly why the SEC is such complete crap this year, and there are a lot of real tangible reasons, Kentucky had 581 yards of offense. 581, baby. They had five. They outgained Louisville. They outgained legendary brain Bobby Petrino and the likely Heisman winner, Lamar Jackson. They dominated them at the line of scrimmage. They had 229 yards rushing. I think they ran like 8 plays. Maybe 8 plays. Steven Johnson was a monster at quarterback. He had 338 yards. He was the better passer. He didn't throw 3 interceptions. Lamar Jackson did.
And
fumbled.
And that's secretly the most annoying part of this. I don't care that Kentucky won. I would have been fine if Kentucky had just won this game. I'm super annoyed that now we have to talk about the Heisman. And, like, it was so nice to just be like, yeah, Lamar Jackson's going to win it. Don't even bother. Don't pay attention to it. And now we have to have this, like, real aggravating conversation. Well, you know, he collapsed down the stretch. That's what Louisville needed him the most. And isn't this a no, I just don't want to do it.
He didn't collapse down the stretch.
No, but people will say he did. People will say he did. His numbers the last like month of the season weren't nearly as good as his numbers at the beginning. His numbers at the beginning were fucking insane.
His numbers included turnovers. So
his numbers also included getting sacked like 11 times.
Collapsed, sure. And yes, he doesn't have an offensive line. He does not have an offensive line at all.
No,
I mean,
I hear you.
He deserves the Heisman, but it should be a conversation now. If we give a shit about this trophy, which none of us do,
Spencer does because he's a voter and he's already voting for Sefo Leofau. So
Spencer doesn't give a shit. Spencer just votes.
Remember, I cannot actually discuss this because the Heisman has this brilliant policy of, don't discuss it ahead of time.
Yeah,
we wouldn't want anyone to have a discussion about the thing that we're trying to protect and promote, right?
Yeah, it's like voting for Pope, shrouded in secrecy, and also nobody from Kentucky will ever win it.
If you take a selfie in the booth while writing down your Heisman vote, you'll be arrested.
Yeah, that's it. The Heisman police will come and get me. Billy Sims will knock on my door and yell.
Billy Sims might do that, actually.
He really might. You really might. But now we have to have this fake discussion about a fake story. This is a total Facebook story. Please share. I don't think Lamar Jackson deserves this. I'm Clay Travis, and I'm going to tell you exactly what you think and act like it's controversy.
What?
I mean, in any other year, sure. Let's keep an open mind and see who else is deserving. It's just there's no other option.
There's no clear second best choice.
I mean, Alabama has like three running backs. Yeah, unless you're going to give it to all of them, what are you going? That's always the fallback option. Mm-hmm. Is just give it to somebody from Alabama.
The team.
But sure, fine. Let's argue about the Heisman.
Who is Louisville going to play in a bowl game now? What do we have the projections up for that yet?
Either they can hang on to the Orange Bowl spot.
Yeah, that ain't happening. Thanks, Florida.
Well, they did beat Florida State by 43 points. It comes down to Louisville or FSU. Louisville has a head-to-head.
They must be amazing then, by the way.
I mean, they both lost to Clemson. That evens out. A loss to Kentucky is comparable to a loss to North Carolina. Look at the records. They really are. And otherwise, Louisville stomped Florida State head-to-head and also lost to Houston. I mean, their resumes are really close, and I feel like the rankings on Tuesday will give us a good look. And then Bama beats Florida and further degrades one of Florida State's best wins. So it's either Louisville in the Orange Bowl against Michigan or Penn State or Wisconsin or Ohio State, or it's, down in the Russell Athletic or something.
Yeah. Let's get to the question of why is the SEC such ass? Why is it so bad? Why? We ask, is it so so very, very bad. We all have varying theories on this, and they're pretty material. There's not a lot here that seems to like not make a lot of sense. Ryan?
The coaches are shitty. Hey, look at that. The coaches are shitty and trying to copy like the uncopyable Alabama blueprint at this when like it's funny to think back to when Urban Meyer first came to Florida, and he didn't succeed by saying, like, hey, who's already doing well in the SEC? Let me do that shit. No, he was like, nah, I got something new. I'm going to try something different. Oh, wait, look at that. It worked. Like,
let's just start at the top. Okay. And I don't want you to go like crap or not crap.
Okay.
But
yep.
You can just use one word to describe each of them.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. So Alabama, Nick Saban, he's definitively not crap.
Right.
He's definitely not a crap coach.
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I can verify. He's not. Arkansas. Brett Bielema. Let's be real honest here.
usually not crap, relatively, compared to long-term program. There's no real short way to say it.
I mean, shit, Wisconsin's just as good, if not better, without him.
Yeah, Wisconsin controls its own national title destiny.
And it's not like the Big Ten got easier in the interim. It got a hell of a lot fucking harder.
Yeah, because he built it up so
yeah, that's right.
So
that's
grand.
Right. Yeah.
So glorious.
Let me give you, do you know Brett Bielema's record at Arkansas right now with a salary of $4 million
career record?
No, I mean in conference.
Just right now?
His record right now at Arkansas with a $4 million salary and a massive buyout.
I think they're 3-5 in conference.
Yes, I mean overall
since
he walked in. Now we can bust it down to conference, and that's going to look way worse. I'll just give you a little spoiler. It'll look way worse.
Yeah. He's got to be, if we're talking overall record, he's got to be one or two games above or below 500.
Jason, got a guess?
Overall?
Yeah, overall.
I'll say a couple games over 500.
He has 25-25. And in conference is 10-22 right now.
Perfect 10.
Yeah, it's 10-22. Gus Malzahn, crap or not crap?
Not crap.
Overall, not crap. Yeah, because you look at who Auburn lost to this season, and by and large, you can explain away all of it.
Yeah, I'm going to go not crap. He's definitely not crap.
The Georgia game was crap, but it was mismanaged injury planning, basically, which is not ideal. But overall, you have to say not crap.
Fresh out of quarterbacks, ultimately that's his fault, but still.
Yeah, which, by the way, that's another factor in the SEC being crap, quarterbacks, right? Like, Auburn couldn't keep one healthy, and they really didn't have one on the pipeline who sort of stepped up or who they developed thus far.
No, so they had a Heisman candidate. Did you not know?
Oh, who was that?
It was Jeremy Johnson,
he started against Bama.
Yep.
Wow, crazy.
They had that, and they've had a former star JUCO backup.
The next one's going to be a difficult answer for me.
Okay.
Jim McElwain at Florida.
Like perfectly average.
Yeah.
I'm going to say definitively not crap.
No, I mean, I appreciate that, but you are watching Will Muschamp after he went to obedience school.
Correct. That's what this is. He's not crap. He's not what I want, but he's not crap. Like, they can't. Like, I am irrational. I would want to fire him after yesterday. That's not going to happen.
He is our George H.W. Bush, where we're like, yeah, none of this is memorable, and you're not going to get a second term, but I think we don't hate you. I don't know. There are people we hate more. Let's say that.
Four years, and I wish you well.
Enjoy your library.
Sure. The next one's fun. Kirby Smart.
Crap.
You just hit him with the one gotta go.
No, man, I mean, that Georgia team, fuck that, man. They are absolute crap right now, and for everybody who wants to be, oh, they're going to be so good next year, Jacob Eason, blah, blah, you know what, we ain't talking about next year, we're talking about this year, where they did nothing. If it's not for the Auburn game, they lose to all of their rivals and to Vanderbilt, and get hammered by an Ole Miss team that doesn't even ended up making a bowl. This team is crap.
I think at this point, Vandy's been elevated to a rival.
Yeah, no, it's the rivalry.
Just throw them out. And I mean, Ole Miss, shit, man. Those are the two churchiest, frattiest schools. So sure, you lost to all your rivals.
Go ahead.
Jim McElwain, we decided was not crap. But he does not have a quarterback for some reason 2 years into this, when people say, well, man, he hasn't gotten to work with one of his quarterbacks yet. Well, whose goddamn fault is that?
Yeah, I mean,
you're the coach.
I think it's the online pharmacy's fault, but.
I mean, there's that. But still, man, contingency planning.
I know.
Other coaches have made this work. Other coaches have done this. You've lost to FSU twice in a row. No one should lose to Florida State at anything. I mean anything.
Man, loses.
Checkers, life, income.
Loses fucking complimentary for what Florida's done to Florida. Like, I'll just own it right now. Florida State, from top to bottom, is better than Florida. That's why it's hard to get mad at that game. It's like, yeah, one of these teams came into the season as a legitimate national title contender that things just didn't really break the right way for. And the other one was not expected to win a crappy division, but somehow stumbled literally ass backwards into it. I can't be mad. It's like one of these teams is much better organized and run than the other.
This team, the roster looks like somebody went shopping when they were hungry. That's what it looks like. Like, I don't know, pick up one of those.
Why are there so many Twizzlers?
I forgot quarterback again. Like, yeah, that's
put Twizzlers in. Twizzlers, throw deep.
Sure. And it should be mentioned, by the way, Kirby Smart has a quarterback. Like, they got a quarterback. He's good. He also has an offensive coordinator who sometimes does things like passing when they have a lead against a team they can run the ball at will on, which resulted in an interception, which resulted in Georgia Tech getting the tying TD, which resulted in Georgia Tech eventually getting the winning TD yesterday, 28-21. Georgia lost to Georgia Tech. That should not happen in the modern era.
How the fuck do you outrush Georgia Tech on the exact same number of carries and lose at home? None of that makes sense. Georgia Tech is not an especially complex equation box score wise, but you managed to fuck it up, Georgia.
Yeah. Way to go, Kirby Smart.
Crap. Move on. Next. Butch Jones? Crap.
Crap.
You know what? Wait, I wasn't going to get to Butch Jones yet, but okay. I want to do a preview crap. That's how crap Butch Jones is. He's crap.
Yeah. All right. Who's next?
I sound like Kirk Ferentz in that clip. Crap. Total crap. Kentucky, Mark Stoops. I'm going to argue not crap.
I mean, seems like not crap.
He's Schrodinger's crap.
Schrodinger's crap.
Because, you know what? This team still lost to Southern Miss. This team still got hammered by Florida.
That's a Southern Miss is a bowl team, buddy.
I understand. I hear you on all that.
Down 13-0 to Austin Peay as recently as last week.
this team is crap and not crap at the same time.
I think I think not crap. I mean, Kentucky should be bad. Kentucky should have horrible, ugly losses. I mean, if Kentucky goes 7-5, not crap. I don't give a shit how it got there.
Next, Ed Orgeron. Ed Orgeron. I'm gonna go for the moment. I'm going not crap.
Not crap. The real problem is gonna be when the standard at LSU becomes very clearly not this binary that we have set up.
I would also add, by the way, Mark Stoops has a quarterback. I think Steven Johnson's gonna be fine. Right when we go to like why your quarterback is crap, but he's young. That's another reason the SEC sucked. There's just been this massive turnover at quarterback. Ed Orgeron. No quarterback. Not a real promising thing if you're looking for negatives going into 2017.
He also has no Cam Cameron, so I'll take that if I'm an LSU fan.
True. Yeah, that's true. Coming out high. Speaking of have a quarterback, might kind of be crap. I'm going to say Hugh Freeze. Hugh Freeze is not crap.
No, Hugh Freeze, I don't think managed this season all that well, but you are allowed to have one. When you have taken a program from where it was to where they got, you are allowed to have one down 5-7 year and it not be a total blemish on your record. So yeah, he gets provisional not crap status. He's on crap probation.
He's on crap watch.
Yeah, he's on crap watch, but does have a quarterback because Shea Patterson's going to be real good. They threw him in with zero prep and he did pretty well. So I think they'll be pretty good. A weird one, Barry Odom. Barry Odom.
No one knows.
Yeah,
no.
Don't care.
Many total minutes did we watch of Mizzou this year? I watched not a single second.
Same.
Yeah, I'm gonna go. I watched two games. I'm gonna go with crap so far.
We are not qualified to weigh in, but
Will Muschamp, crap. Has a quarterback, crap.
Bowl eligible. Will Muschamp.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, you know what? I'll kind of side with Jason here and say I don't think Will Muschamp's great, but South Carolina was better than I thought they would be this year. I thought they would not be in most games, and other than the Clemson game, they really didn't get hammered by anybody. They lost, you know, their fair share, but they weren't getting tore apart.
So let's go by the Hugh Freeze standard. A coach is allowed one losing season, right?
Yeah.
Well, Will Muschamp has one losing season.
Oh, you know what? Years. You know what? I just... Please go to the next one, Spencer. Please.
I got a hard one.
Okay.
I think another difficult one.
Kevin Sumlin?
Mm-hmm.
Man, yeah. like that...
It's not crap, but boy, does it... Boy, does it spoil quickly.
That,
you want to talk about not having a winning record in conference since his first season at coach.
Kevin's stuck
on 8-5. If they lose their bowl game, they'll be 8-5.
I mean, eight wins is good. Like, sure, it looks bad to get a big record and then blow it. But if they pulled, you know, if they did it the other way around, or if they were more judicious with the wins, we wouldn't have the same opinion. I'm going to go not crap. There was a bunch of weird stuff that happened at quarterback. Had two or three transfers all at once, and
why is that not on him?
That's his roster. I realize that. But if we're gonna give Hugh Freeze a pass for all the shit that happened this year, sure. Let's do the same for Sumlin. It's really easy to look at eight wins like that's just shit, but. It's eight wins. It's not worth $5 million a year, but
that's
it's
two
not
wins.
Crap.
That's two wins better than we said Texas A&M was going to be this year. We said 6-6, and they went 8-4.
That's true. And I will point out, not really a defined quarterback situation coming back. So on our two factors, I'm just going to go Kevin Sumlin, not crap.
I will say this: this year with this SEC West. For Texas A&M to not even finish top three in the division, that's pretty crap.
Yeah.
But is anybody really top three in the? I feel like
no,
that division
no,
is.
There's, it's the standings a tie for
are,
fourth.
Standings are everyone is sixth. I don't care what the numbers say.
Mississippi State creeping up to fifth place.
Yeah, we can go trending crap if you want.
Okay,
that'd be
that's
fine.
Fine.
Additionally, we have two more coaches to go. Derek Mason. You know what? Before this year, I would have been like definitive crap. I'm gonna after this year trend. I'll say this: crap, but trending non-crappily.
I'm gonna go not crap.
Okay.
I'll just say straight up not crap.
Also,
if you go 6-6 at Vandy, no matter how down the division is, not crap.
Yeah, that's totally accurate.
Okay. So we'll just go overall, not crap on him, and have a quarterback. Yeah,
afraid so.
I'm just as confused by this as you are, but here we are. Finally, I want to do one where we can just pile on the crap. Butch Jones, crap, complete crap.
Who crap?
Absolute just... crap.
Tennessee, what did you do? What did you do? And like. Oh my God, Tennessee! What did you do?
I don't need to even point to anything on the field to say he's crap.
Oh,
at all.
It's. I will say this: Tennessee did a really impressive job of the first, really like the first five games of the year. The defense pretty much carried them. The Georgia game was kind of an exception, but like. The defense was it kept them around long enough in the Florida game to come back and win it. Defense absolutely won them the App State game, and they recovered a shit ton of fumbles in the Virginia Tech game. And then towards the end of the season, kind of like from South Carolina, that loss on, the defense was just like, well, we did our part. We'll see y'all later.
So all those lucky breaks in the first five games, half those go the other way, and this is a 5-7 or 6-6 team.
Oh, boy. And then he's absolutely fired, right?
Yeah.
Probably ought to.
I mean, that would be it. That's before you consider any Title IX implications.
If you fire Les Miles because you couldn't get a snap off against Auburn.
Yeah. How are we rolling with that? How's that going to look when we look at the 2016 Tennessee team. Like, I, you know, there's two dudes who, if they just wanted to walk, like, the sport doesn't miss them. Doesn't miss a damn thing.
And they're both Cincinnati, Cincinnati born and bred.
All Cincinnati does is crank out lovable men. Mark D'Antonio stands as the most lovable coach to ever come from Cincinnati.
A man who a Google search for Mark D'Antonio smiling will be like, sorry, no results found.
Mark D'Antonio smiling is always like the disrespect meme. So like even him smiling is like he's thinking about how much everyone hates him.
Yeah.
But I mean, compared to Brian Kelly and Butch Jones, I mean, Mark D'Antoni is sterling, lovable citizen of beloved man.
Yeah, and he's done some like kind of sus stuff when it comes to letting players back on the team, and it's not even close to Butch Jones, not even close.
Yeah,
and it's not close to like Brian Kelly's general air of malignant, like, scorn for everything around him.
Oh, well, don't worry. Brian Kelly's going to dump you before you dump him anyway.
I'm looking at my options. You go right ahead.
I'm definitely not looking at my options. I don't know. How many times we talked about this?
Yeah, definitely not. Notre Dame, by the way, is now 4-8. They lost 45-27 to USC. Adoree Jackson was a monster in that game.
Yeah, God, that game just didn't. It didn't even matter at this point. Sorry, Notre Dame. You're just like, I would have been fine if we had gone this whole podcast and not even mentioned Notre Dame.
No, I'm going to mention it for two reasons.
You hate Notre Dame and you're full of spite.
Yeah, no. Full of burning hatred for this team and this program. Especially because two things. One, Brian Kelly kept the team on the field in the rain in L.A., which I maintain, when it's raining in L.A., that's psychological warfare. It doesn't make any sense. Everyone's thrown off by it. Notre Dame made him stay on the field, blocked everyone getting on the field so he could lecture his team, which I'm sure they really appreciated on the boot end of a 24-7 ass-kicking at the time, to say that that's not the way Notre Dame played. And the team responded, particularly Jerry Tillery, because Jerry Tillery, a defensive lineman for Notre Dame, kicked a dude in the head. I believe it was Akacedric Ware. It kicked him in the head when he was on the ground with what most people think is probably a concussion. Yeah, Tillery just sort of, you know, boop, popped him in the head with his foot as he walked by and stepped on another player's ankle. That's how he responded to Brian Kelly's lecturing.
Yeah, the head brush, I can write that off as like, didn't see him, didn't know what he was doing. The ankle stomp, it's like, oh, he squared up. He just got him in his sights. It was like, crush.
Yeah, and the stomp was one where you say, okay, you know, the benefit of the doubt we were giving you on the other one,
you lost it. I'm looking at Notre Dame's 2017 schedule. They opened the season at home with Temple and Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
There is a non-zero possibility that Notre Dame brings back Brian Kelly after a very disastrous 4-8 season. And starts the season 0-2 with losses to Temple and Georgia at home. Contemplate.
Think that'd be a wrap.
Yeah. Gotta say it might.
That'd probably be a wrap. Also, you think players are going to buy back into this? Are going to circle up, extend the love to this extremely charismatic man? No, I don't think so.
Brian Kelly being carried off the field after his firing-securing loss. They douse coach
against his will.
They lose by 30 points to USC and douse coach and carry him off. Put me down.
Why did they have a Gatorade bucket full of kerosene anyway? That seems weird.
I would not give to see a man who was paid that much money to coach college football picked up by his players carried aloft on their shoulders and thrown into a dumpster. Oh, I would pay so much money for that.
Wiggling and trying to break free.
Hey,
I pay your salaries.
Oh, like a giant shaved Ewok. Gross. This reminds me that Georgia, you absolutely deserve to lose to Georgia Tech because you know who you brought in to consult? Brian Van Gorder.
Yeah, you chose to do that.
Tell us what you're gonna see. Other rivalry fallout. I love that we get like 40 minutes into this podcast before we discuss the actual biggest game. That's great. Ohio State, Michigan. Probably
game. Yeah, I mean, it was. It had its share of sloppy, and it had its share of ref fuckery. So it was not the best played, most pristine game of the season, but it was one of the most fun to watch.
It was the game of the year. This was the game of the year.
Would you put it over Clemson Louisville at this point?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I would for.
I would probably disagree, but at the time Clemson Louisville had the same stakes.
Yeah, but staging and the fact that Clemson Louisville, that's an interesting, intriguing, budding rivalry in the ACC. This is church. This is, I don't really like to carry over credit historically too much, but. You play at noon in Ohio Stadium, and it looks shitty and cold.
What about Oregon State? We throwing that in there?
That's in there. That's right up there.
Okay, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Don't worry.
Top five.
Michigan. What's confusing to me is that Michigan got what I thought was a really impressive performance from a very hurt Wilton Spate, and they just couldn't do anything with it. They couldn't do enough with it, I should say.
Yeah, also this, that Michigan, a run team, Michigan got 91 yards on the ground. I know they had three turnovers.
There were not many yards.
No, there were not many yards on the ground for Michigan at all. I don't expect that's going to be the case in the future. I mean, Michigan's just going to bow up and get bigger and meaner and more hardballish along the offensive line. But, man, you got to do better than that, particularly when Ohio State – that was all Ohio State really could do was run the ball.
And that they couldn't even get going until pretty damn late.
So. Go three and out. Finally break one. That was pretty much it. And then count on the quarterback with one arm to cough up the ball a few times.
Which he did, including the play of the, if you want to know a play of the game, Michigan fans, I know you will cite up stills, angles, multiple pieces of evidence,
memes, MS Paint, arrows.
You can
circles,
see the ball
diagrams.
Goes back and to the left.
Back and
to the left.
It really did go back and to the left.
It did.
Into that man's ass. It did go back into the, actually more to the right, but still.
To his left.
Dossiers and well-documented, very empirical cases for why the angle of the light reveals that, in fact, a spot went one way or the other.
Here's what I appreciate about the Big Ten referees who made that. Like, there is a very compelling case to be made that the Big Ten referees fucked over Michigan earlier in this game at multiple points. Like, I am absolutely willing to hear it. I think they missed a lot of calls, and I think the sort of the disparity in the penalty numbers makes you at least scratch your head. But this call, this fourth down call, was so close and in real time was so hard to parse and wasn't so clearly wrong on review that they left you with was one that was just like, yeah, man, close calls happen. And so that's all we're talking about and not any of the other shit that they got wrong.
Yeah, that. And I mean, I'll give you a couple of PI calls in there, a couple of rough non-PI calls in there against Michigan. But you know what? Again, you don't leave it up to that. You don't fumble on the one-yard line. You don't run the ball as badly as Michigan ran it. And you don't let Ohio State do what they did late in the game, which is drive for winning scores on the ground. It's really cool to watch Ohio State, by the way, because they have this Urban Meyer thing where they go, oh, we're not gaining any yards running. Cool, we're just going to keep running. Eventually you'll die if I just keep hitting you hard enough.
Since I just looked earlier today, we put up a collection of every Michigan fan Zapruder-ing that's gone on with that final call, and I just looked in the SB Nation CFB Twitter account. People have sent three new ones that I had yet to see
far. Good.
They're still innovating and finding new ways to draw arrows and lines on the same set of pictures.
You know what? 11 Warriors, I will buy the shirt that you're making about this play. Just already put me down for one. I know it's gonna be mean as shit.
Yeah. Land Grant Holy Land, that just popped up. They have one that says, actually, the spot was good.
I think that's probably the most honest and concise argument.
Oh boy.
I'm one over. Why not? Yeah, this was I did really enjoy watching this game though, especially because anytime one coach gets a 15-yard personal foul for throwing his papers, I'm totally for it. That to me is a sign that you're doing rivalry correctly.
So I will say this. Obviously, the game is the game, and Ohio State wants to win it no matter where they are in the course of their season. But obviously, this one had intensely high implications for the rest of the season as a whole. I understand that Ohio State fans are all about, you know, let's get into the playoff. Let's do some damage there. We've seen this story before. Ohio State team that people don't believe in gets in with the last seed, runs wreckage over the rest of the conference or over the rest of the playoff, et cetera, et cetera. JT Barrett's numbers, man, they are like you can pick any number of bad Big Ten quarterbacks, and in a lot of the relevant categories, he is just fucking lagging, man.
It's not good.
It really is not. It's not.
And this team, they're really not, on the whole, going to blow your doors off. But JT Barrett does have one advantage, by the way. Two advantages.
His left leg and his right leg.
Make that four. Okay. Four advantages total. He gets his defense to play behind, which is the defense that just beat the defense that previously was ranked ahead of them in terms of S&P. They were one. Yeah. Bama's two. And they managed to still put together winning drives against that defense. JT Barrett's just... he will, at one point, make a marginal difference. He's not going to do anything spectacular, but he will do something that you cannot answer defensively. And in a game that they play that's that close and relies on field position and defense, it'll make a difference. Also, if Ohio State's kicker had been accurate, this game would have been over.
Yep.
We wouldn't have even had OT. He had one of those aberrant games where he just missed two field goals, including a gimme out of nowhere. So it really, going to OT... this shows you where Michigan is. This is how long it takes, by the way, if you're dealing with one of these like monstrosities of a program that's capable of like sucking up that much talent and collateral and momentum all by itself. Your Alabama's or your Ohio State. There's really very few. Maybe Texas is another program that can do that. This is how long it takes to climb the hill against them. Michigan's lost to them with Harbaugh twice in a row now. Once in the closest game in program history that Michigan lost. Right? This is the first time, I think, first time it'd been to OT. Yep. in the history of the series,
yeah.
Yeah, the first time it'd been to OT in the history of the series. And it, and they lost. Like, and Michigan is recruiting the doors off of that program. And they're still that much behind, right? So, I you're watching it, you go, this all makes sense. And I still, like, bleed for Michigan because, god damn, that sucked.
They'll be fine. They'll be fine.
They will be fine. But for 24 hours, you just want to like freebase Epsom salts.
I would like to dispel one myth here. I think a lot of people walk away from this and they're like, oh man, Michigan fans are really going to bitch about the refereeing now. I promise you, that was true no matter whether or not Michigan won this game.
Oh, that's a very good point. Yes, we won the game. However, I am more concerned about. I have
the following eight pages will attest.
Thread.
Double. I'm sorry. Double Wolverine. Undergrad 02. Law school 07. My brief is as follows.
Hey, guess what? Colorado plays in the Pac-12 championship game.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's right. That's awesome. Totally true and accurate.
Good job, Ryan.
Thanks. I took the liberty of pulling together our preseason predictions just to see how wrong we were. man, Colorado, we did you dirty. We said 5-7. We said you would barely miss a bowl game. And you fucking showed us.
We felt great about that. We felt like we were really boosting Colorado.
We did. We thought we were, yeah. We were, I will say this. I haven't pulled our Big 12 numbers are still sort of contingent on the last week of games. I threw out everybody that we, if you were within a game on either side of our prediction, I basically said that we were right. Because I think that's a fair margin of error. The ACC, we did really well. The teams we got wrong, Wake Forest, we said they were going to go 3-9. They actually went 6-6. Clawfence forever. Georgia Tech, we said you were going to go 10-2, and that still feels insane. But they did at least go 8-4. So we were off, but not like huge margins off. Every other conference, I mean, we got 7 teams wrong in the Big Ten. We got 7 teams wrong in the Pac-12. We got 7 teams wrong in the SEC. We're really bad at this. Like, aggressively bad at this.
Yeah, I'm proud. I don't care. We left it all on the field. We tried our best. We tried to guess. And ultimately, yeah, we were wrong. Flagrantly wrong. But we should be proud of that wrongness.
We said UCLA was going to go 9-3.
Man, we really should have failed them. the minute that they decided to run, like, we're going to be more physical. Are you more physical? No? Oh, okay. That means you're not going to be able to do that, are you? That's my favorite.
A thing you say when you accidentally gain 10 pounds because you weren't paying attention. You're like, well, I'm just going to be a brawler now.
Yeah, that ain't you, dude. Don't do it.
Yeah, we were just, God, we were bad at this. We said Wisconsin was going 7-5. We said Penn State was going 6-6. I know.
I stand by that. I think Wisconsin is 7-5.
I will give UCLA credit. You went 4-8 in like the quietest way possible. Nobody is talking about what a catastrophe UCLA football was this season because you are overshadowed in your own conference by Oregon doing the exact same thing. Can we talk about Oregon for a second?
Might take more than a second.
Yeah, I like talking about that because there's this argument as to whether you should fire somebody.
Yeah.
Right? Well, what's your value? Right? Like, what do you bring to the program? When I ask you, like, what Mark Helfrich brings to the program, it would be evidenced by an administration that had not fired a coach since 1976 being loyal and really sweating through firing him, right?
Yeah.
They were looking like 2 weeks ago. Like that's where we're at in terms of where Mark Helfrich is. Where we're at is the name Lane Kiffin being thrown out.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So you want to talk to me about, well, I don't know, what value do you bring? Right?
Is it recruiting? No. No, it's not. No. Not these days.
There's
not in the
Pac-12
North. Boy, is it coaching the players up? Do you get the most out of them over the course of? No, it's definitely not that either. Do you hire good and impressive rising assistants? No, I wouldn't say you do, Mark. Mark, I'd say that's a weakness.
Yeah.
So, not much here.
But
what exactly do you do here?
Do you beat the rival that you beat every year, because that's just what you do? In this case, Oregon State. No, Mark Helfrich.
No, you don't beat either of those. No.
You do not. What I will say is this. Coaching firing season in college football is always impressive because there are so many slapdick ways to go about it. There is what Texas did, which is sort of wait until independent Texas media said that Tom Herman was going to go to LSU and then go get Tom Herman, which was kind of funny in its own way. There was LSU's reaction to that, which was insisting that they would never get in a bidding war, even though they pursued Jimbo fucking Fisher.
I'm not owned.
And then there's what Oregon's doing, which, as last I've checked, you two know better than I do. They have let it leak that they are looking for a new head coach, but they have not currently even talked to the current one.
It's not like a divorce. It's like
bigamy is what it is.
It's like a uncoupling or something, you know, like it's like an arranged kind of thing where like ex-wife is my best friend.
I like Brian. Stuff. Yeah, we're staying together for mortgage purposes. She's on the lease, so I like Brian Floyd's suggestion.
Coaching marriage.
I like Brian Floyd's suggestion that they're just trying to ghost him. That they're just hoping he'll just move on and be like, man, it's weird that they just stopped calling.
Huh.
That and
he shows up to recruit against Oregon's actual head coach. Oh, awkward.
That and you should also note the AD, right? The AD got a call from him, right? Like
yes.
Let's drive that point home. The AD at Oregon got a call from the coach who said, oh, what's up with my job? He wasn't like, oh, let's review that. No. Like, we'll get around to it, buddy. Also, oh, yeah, Phil Knight said in the locker room after the Oregon State job that there were 20 out of 25 teams that were outfitted by Nike, and he couldn't be more proud of the one in this locker room. The problem is that locker room was Ohio State.
He's super proud of Oregon. See, they're not in the top 25. Therefore, he's still more proud of... Surely Phil Knight is really proud of Oregon. And it's just that ranking thing. That's the only thing standing in the way.
Let me give you one little thing about this, too. We're talking about recruiting. You want to know another thing that's going to light a fire under everyone's ass? Oregon's currently 27th in Rivals rankings. Take Rivals rankings for what they're worth, which is very little. But they're at least a windsock as to what direction a program is trending. Not that Oregon has ever been huge on recruiting, just not a huge population, not a massive area. They've done real well getting certain talented people in there and then developed their 3 stars real well. Guess who's 28 right behind them? Oregon State.
Uh-oh. That's
right there, homie. Like, right behind you. So, yeah, that's what we're looking at in terms of getting people in.
What I like is that, so there are 5 active athletic directors, and yes, I just called Barry Alvarez active, interpret that as you will, that sit on the college football playoff selection committee. And originally, when they announced sort of what the committee was going to be made, how it would be made up and who would be on it, there was a lot of head scratching about like, well, gosh, Dan Radakovich, if Clemson's in there, that's, you know, they're going to have to figure out recusals and all that. Rob Mullins, Oregon athletic director, has a very different problem right now. He has to go and advocate and seriously advocate, because it's not a sure thing, on behalf of Washington. That's a thing he has to do.
He has to come. Like, the thing they do is they say, okay, who have you seen in person? Let's get the real the real on-site expertise to go with whatever other bullshit
we use. And Rob Mullins is going to be like, don't sleep on Nebraska, man. They're feisty.
Listen, there are at least 7 or 8 teams that are as good as Washington.
We need to expand the playoff to 8 teams, one for everybody that beat Oregon.
Oregon State, I saw them with my eyes. They were very impressive, very dominant, had a lot of game control.
Cal is just outside the playoff. They're so close.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what you do if you're Oregon.
You have a better plan. You can't decide, okay, you beat Utah. So now, like, that's the real problem, is when you get to the end of the season, there has to be some sort of sense of like, we're doing this or we're not. Saying, okay, you know, Charlie Strong can save his job if he beats TCU, or, oh, you beat Utah, so you're safe unless you lose. So, like, it feels like splitting hairs in such a stupid way that I think you just need to, once you get 10 games in, you should know if you're keeping this coach or not. Now, if they turn the program around completely over the last 3 weeks or whatever, yeah, you can maybe have that conversation. But, like, it's the same thing that almost happened with Ed Orgeron and LSU, where it was like, these small margin games are really, you know, Oregon almost didn't beat Utah. Oregon literally came within an inch of not beating Utah. and that was what put Mark Helfrich back in the safe. Like, none of it makes any goddamn sense.
I mean, yeah, and I don't know who they like. Texas, you can get. I think you can manufacture a lot of mostly artificial controversy about how they handled Charlie. Charlie knew he was done. He knew he was fired. He wasn't going to be. It wasn't happening. They just had to wait. I still maintain anybody who says, "Well, you know, he had a chance." No, he didn't.
No,
he didn't have a chance for. He didn't have a chance from the start. Steve Patterson hired him. Red McCombs didn't get consulted on it, so Red gets all itchy. Red gets all hit up because he's a wealthy Texan, and you have to consult them about things like that. He didn't have a friend in the building after Steve Patterson was fired. Well, everybody liked him, but in terms of the booster base, he's never their pick. And that may be fair or unfair, but those were the conditions. Now they have Tom Herman. Tom Herman's going to have Mack Brown sitting right there, his old boss, because he was a GA under him. By the way, he was the GA who rode on the hood, or he rode on the car with Ricky Williams in the national championship parade. I think Tom Herman's job was to keep Ricky in, because Ricky just might wander off, like, ooh, that looks neat. Come back in the car, Ricky. Come here. But yeah, they hired Herman. Herman's going to be a great fit. He'll be fine. Texas did pretty well. What the hell does Oregon do? That's how I want to end.
Just
what the hell does Oregon do to hire a coach who's going to come in there? Because I got one answer, and it's weird.
I mean, you might as well start with weird, because there are no conventional answers. There are no like hot Pac-12 assistants, unless you want to go down to FCS in the area. There are very few mid-major teams in the area. The options are slim. So let's start weird. Row the duck. Okay.
Just row the duck.
Not that weird though. I mean, like,
it's pretty weird. He's
holding out for something in the Midwest. Why would Oregon not take PJ Fleck?
Yeah, are we recording during? Isn't Purdue announcing something today? Did that happen? Did I miss that?
No one knows. Who cares?
Okay.
No one will be at the press conference.
Word will filter out by Thursday or so.
I do. You know what? We talked about this last night. Louisville's AD announced, I think, around like 8 or 9 o'clock. He was like, we're having a press conference tomorrow. Major coaching news after Louisville loses to Kentucky, and you're like, oh shit, something's going on. Nope, it's a new volleyball coach.
Which does sort of relate to our man Bobby Petrino. Volleyball.